This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Jesse Harlan. Hey, it is so much fun to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is really great.
And I would love to talk with you, if you want, about your time with LucasArts and Lucasfilm. But you've got a game coming out, Mafia 3. It sounds like a fantastic game.
Yeah, it after spending 10 years at Lucasfilm doing a lot of Star Wars stuff, and even after that, I'm still like the lead composer on BioWare's The Old Republic, Star Wars The Old Republic, which we've been doing new music for years now. It was really an amazing experience to put all of the orchestral stuff aside and try and figure out what to do next for this. Really, like the thing that is great about the Mafia series is their storytelling ability. It's always been a tremendous focus of the franchise, and so you know, storytelling is so integral to what we're trying to do with the music on the game. So it was a lot of fun to try and figure out. It was very early on. We decided we weren't going to do an orchestral score for the game. And so as soon as you make that decision, the next question is, well, what are we going to do instead? So that was a lot of fun to try and figure out what direction we were going to go in and what was it going to look like.
Well, the game itself, it just looks so fascinating because it's set in 1968 in this fictional version of New Orleans, New Bordeaux. And so right off the bat, I would think that would have given you a lot of inspiration for what direction you could take the music.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, when we started, when did we start? Maybe 2.5 years ago is when I first started having conversations with Matt Bauer, who's Hangar 13, the development studio, Hangar 13's audio lead. So Matt and I started talking, and he sent me some concept art for the world, and he sent me some descriptions of what the characters were going to be, and what the I think it was even too early to have much of a sense of the story. Maybe a little. Well, no, there was some. There was some sense of what the story would be. And so the way that we started is I told Matt, after looking at all that stuff, I said, I see four different ways that this score could go. And I think it would be a great idea if what we do is I start by doing four different demos for you, one of each. I called them fence posts. One of each of the fence post demos. So each one would represent a sort of the purest form of a particular direction that we could go in. And it would fence off the area like a big matrix. It'd fence everything off, and each corner is a pure form, and maybe what we would end up with is something somewhere in the middle, leaning more towards one or the other, but that this would define the boundaries within which we could go. And so the first one was to do an orchestral demo, because Mafia 1 and Mafia 2 both had orchestral scores. And I think early on, from Hayden Blackman, the project lead, and Matt Bauer and myself, we all decided the orchestra thing was going to be the safe way to go.
Yeah.
But we all thought that because it was so unique in where it's set and when it's set, that that it'd really be a good idea to try something else. So the orchestral demo was the first one I did. The second one I did was a rock-based demo. What would it sound like if, say, The Doors or Led Zeppelin had scored the game in 1968?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the demo two was the hard rock demo. Demo three, when you take a look at just on paper, the sort of high level, what is the plot for the game? It's your main character, Lincoln Clay. He goes to Vietnam. He comes back and he finds that things have gone south with his adopted family, and the Italian mob, who has been in this sort of uneasy peace with all of the other mob families. There's the black mob and the Irish mob and the Haitians. They're all there in New Bordeaux, and they all have this sort of power struggle going on. The Italian mob decides that they're tired of maintaining that power struggle, and they just decide to take the control for themselves and wipe everybody else out. And so what happens is it very much fit sort of the archetype of a like 1969, 1970 blaxploitation film plot. So the third demo was, well, what would it sound like if, say, Lalo Schifrin scored the game? So it was a very funk-based but sort of cinematic funk in that way that Lalo Schifrin does demo. And then the fourth one was, what would it sound like if it was a blues-based score? But again, cinematic blues, not just, you know, not just like a 12-bar blues for hours and hours on end. So those are the four demos that I did and I gave to the team. And like I said, the first one, the orchestral one, everyone was like, yeah, that works. It we could do that for the whole thing. And everybody's completely comfortable with the idea that, one, that would work. Two, that that's a score I know easily how to put together and that would be fine. But it feels safe. And they were working so hard on pushing a lot of boundaries with the game that they wanted to not be safe. The rock one, while cool, had some technical hurdles to it. And the technical hurdles are that if you're going to do a score that is a giant wall of rock and roll guitar sounds, suddenly you start running into problems of frequency space. When you're listening to a Led Zeppelin album, you don't have to also worry about making sure that you can hear footsteps and gun reload sounds and make sure that the your weapons are communicating to you that you're out of ammo and all these little nuanced sounds that have to fit over top of a game score that a big rock score would just kind of roll right over like a steamroller. So that one we decided was not the right way to go. Hayden was insistent that the blaxploitation way was not what he wanted to do. He was like, I get it. I understand. One of the writers on the project, he and I are having this same sort of discussion right now, but that's not what I want to do. So the funk idea was put on the side as well. And then we looked at the blues and it just seemed like a really great fit. But we knew it was going to be a really big challenge. And the fact that it fit but was a challenge was exactly the kind of thing we were looking for. So that's how the whole thing kind of came about and started rolling from there.
Oh, man, that is such an interesting process. I mean, the fact that you went through all these different iterations and came at it from all these different angles. And I'm sure there was a moment when you plugged your music into whatever assets they had in the world, and everything just kind of clicked, and everybody was like,
I'll tell you, yes and no. I think that the team, it's so different. When you hear the music, it's so different from a typical game score. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think that, to be honest, I think the team still had, like, to say reservations is the wrong word because they were really supportive of it. And, you know, we wouldn't have gone to Nashville and recorded for 2 weeks like we did if they hadn't been supportive of it. But there was still this nervous, you know, we're doing something that nobody's done before. And is that going to be the right call kind of feeling that I don't think they really were able to put to bed until E3 of this year when the game got such a great response from everybody.
The title track is, I don't know, it sounds almost like it's a kind of a compromise because it's got that wonderful, really soulful cello in it as kind of a nod to the orchestral iteration, and yet you've got all these other great instruments too. And So it seems to me that it's a really nice blend, and hearing it in the iterations, it just sounds great. I mean, I can't imagine it sounding any other way.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, it's funny. The cello is like a holdover from that demo process. The way that I structured the demos was that each one was going to be identical in its structure so that they could compare them all side by side. So each one was a minute long, and they were split up into 20-second segments. 20 seconds of stealth music at the front, 20 seconds of combat music in the middle, and 20 seconds of something that would be more or less, you know, cinematics, cutscene sort of style music at the end. And the orchestral one ended with, you know, various orchestral textures, but had a solo cello playing over top of it. And Matt, the audio lead, he just fell in love with that cello. And so, like, it became this thing that was kind of, okay, Matt loves the cello. Can I, you know, but does that work against, you know, the idea of going with the blues? And when I started looking into all the source material and stuff, yeah, I didn't hear a lot of cello in the blues stuff, but I was still steeping myself in music from the time period. And there's this absolutely amazing album by the Stooges called The Stooges. It's their first album. And it came out in 1969. So, you know, roughly where the game is set. But I was listening to music from about 66 to about 70, just kind of checking things out. And it's an incredible album to listen to because it's punk, but like, I don't know, 7 years before anybody else is doing punk. Except there's a track in the middle that has cello on it. And I heard it and I thought, okay, if the Stooges can put cello with punk, then I can put cello with the blues.
Because why not? And the thing is, in that era, there were orchestral instruments mixed in with rock stuff. You know, there was classical gas, and then there's like a pop version of the Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring. And so there was a lot of like blending of classical sounds and rock. So
blues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cashmere by Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the recording session like? I mean, it has this kind of freewheeling improv quality to it, but was it much more concentrated and focused and written down without a lot of leeway for the musicians?
Yes and no. So the final game score was composed by myself and another composer, a guy named Jim Bonney. And the way that 2K split up the division of labor on it, Jim tackled all of the in-game combat music, and then I tackled all of the cinematics and the I don't know what else to call it. The cutscenes, the front end menus, the creating the themes for all the characters, all of that stuff. And so a lot of what I did was to picture, and a lot of what Jim did was not to picture because it was going to fit throughout in unscripted ways that the player would unfold for themselves. Hmm. So what we did is we went to Nashville because we knew that we were going to need amazing blues players, but the thing about the blues and blues musicians is that a lot of really exceptional blues musicians are not necessarily recording studio literate. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different thing to be able to get somebody into a recording studio, and you know, when you're in a recording studio, every minute counts, and so you need to be able to have somebody that not only fundamentally understands the soul of what you're doing, but they need to be able to very technically be able to pull up certain sounds on their gear very quickly, and we need to be able to say to them like, hey, I'm kind of looking for, you know, what would it sound, can you give me something that sounds like you know, what would Eric Clapton sound like if he was playing Jimi Hendrix guitar? And they need to be able to, you know, quickly be able to do that. So we knew we wanted to go to Nashville and work with these incredible studio musicians who just, this is what they do day in and day out. So we spent 2 weeks there. The first week we did all of Jim's stuff, and that was a lot more like the first way that you described it. So he had written out all of his tunes, and they were very meticulously detailed, but they also then had charts that were stripped down versions of those. And what we ended up doing was using a combination of charts and then just talking the songs through with them. The way the music system works in game is that for Jim's stuff, there's four different levels of intensity to it. So when and it's all based on what's happening with the player. So if the player is sort of stalking the enemies and he's the only one that knows what's going on, then there's a stealth level of intensity to the tracks. If he has acted and yet the enemies don't quite know where he is, now there's a low level intensity of combat music. If he knows where they are and they know where he is, there's a medium level of intensity. And if it's just an all out crazy gun battle, there's a high level of intensity. And so Jim would communicate to the players, this is the intensity level that we're going for. Let's get the structure down. Let's get the piece, you know, roughly sounding how I want it. And then he would start doing things like saying, okay, now we'll run it. Guitar one. I forgot to mention, everybody was in the same recording space at the same time.
Wow.
Which, yeah, which is not typical.
Yeah.
So we had drums, bass, two guitars, harmonica, and Hammond organ, everybody in one space all together with all kinds of baffling and isolation booths for the amps and all sorts of stuff so that we weren't getting a bunch of bleed. You could have things in isolation on the final tracks, but everybody had eye contact. Everybody could play off of each other in terms of improvisation. And so Jim would say things like, okay, so that was a great take. Now this time what we're going to do is, guitar one, guitar two, you guys are going to be trading 8-bar solo sections. Then after you take 8 bars and then guitar two, you take 8 bars. Now let's do a thing where it's guitar one, you take 4 bars, harmonica, you take 4 bars, and we'll go back and forth like that for a while. And so that's how they would record the combat stuff. And then that would be sort of like top level intensity. And then for the next one, we'd talk about, okay, let's change the amp settings a little, dial back the distortion. Let's pull back on the dynamics. Maybe not so much on the cymbals, a little sort of tighter performance on the drums. And that would be the medium intensity, et cetera, until it got down to the stealth level, which was really sort of spacey and ambient and some sort of combination between just like a loose swampy blues, but at the same time almost 60s psychedelic era jam band kind of thing. It was really loose and free by the time we got down to the lowest intensity level.
Oh,
sounds like it'd be so quiet, no one would notice you as you were like hiding out and waiting to get
around. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so you know, by the time we got down to that level, the electric guitars were gone, and everybody was on things like dobro and you know this grainy sounds instead of distorted sounds and slide guitar and all that sort of stuff. So so we spent a week doing that. Then we did my stuff for a week, and my stuff was very much to picture because it was scoring the cutscenes, and we had dialogue that we had to worry about being underneath of, and very different concerns from the combat music. So so my stuff was very much written out. You know, this piece is 4/4 for six bars, then there's a couple bars of three, then there's a section that switches tempos, and now it's in 6/8. And so what we were trying to do is make sure that when we hired the guys who could do a great job with the improvisation and you know blues based collaborative band performance that we did the first week, we also needed guys who were really exceptional when it came to reading, so that we could carry that same sound over and yet have them score stuff to picture. And so there, what I would do is I would mark in the score areas for them where they were allowed to improv, and then the rest of it all had to be played as written. And so we that week was done person by person. So day one, we recorded all bass. Day two, we recorded all the drums. Then we had 2 days of guitar. And then on Friday, the last day of the week, was really amazing because we had two sessions. The afternoon session was the cello, and the morning session was another thing that I don't think anyone's really ever done in games before. And what we did is we brought in three guys who are competitive step dancers from the Tennessee State University step dance team.
Wow.
And they recorded a bunch of body percussion and step dancing.
Was that for the Irish district?
No. This isn't Irish step dancing. This is the step dancing that comes out of black fraternities in the late 1960s. It's got this very amazing, percussive, aggressive stomping and hitting and complex rhythm feel to it that is the focus of a number of movies like Stomp the Yard and whatnot, but it's not something that I have ever seen anybody use in games, and it's something that's really hard to find well recorded material of on YouTube, because it's mostly just people perform it, but there's not a lot that's been done in terms of real high quality capturing of it. So mostly what you get is a lot of camera phone capturing of the audio. So that was a whole other challenge then of how do we capture the audio of body percussion, and it was just a challenge from top to bottom, because I you know when I contacted the contractor and I said you know here we need guys who are really great at guitar and drums and all this stuff, but then we also are going to need dancers, and not just any dancers but percussive step dancers. And he scratched his head for a while. Alan, who's a contractor there in Nashville, he was like, you know, he wasn't sure what it much like if he asked me, like, you mean Irish? And I was like, nope. And I sent him YouTube videos of what I was talking about. And he said, okay, well, I don't know anybody, but I'll figure it out. And sure enough, he did. He found these guys. Like I said, they're from Tennessee State University. And not only were they from the competitive step team of their fraternity, but they all three of them also happened to be drum majors for the school's marching band, which meant that they could read music. So I had all the rhythms written out, and we originally were thinking, well, we've got those parts, but we probably won't need them. It'll be a lot of listening and a lot of communicating in the booth to try and figure out how to get this stuff done, because dancers are great, but dancers typically don't read sheet music. But these guys came in and could read sheet music, so it became just this perfect combination where we just put an iPad in the booth with them, or not in the booth, in the live room with them, that had the parts on it, and they would just read it and practice it a little bit, hitting their arms and their legs and stomping their boots, and they'd say, "Yep, okay, we got it," and then we'd go back in the control room and record it, and it sounded amazing.
That sounds incredible, and that's exactly the sort of thing that I love to hear in game soundtracks, stuff that's never been done before, because I think it kind of lifts the music out of the realm of, oh yeah, here's some more generic game music to something that really makes it special, and it becomes such an integral part of the game itself as you're playing it that you might not be able to put your finger on what it is that's making that sound, but it really gives the game a unique identity.
Yeah. I'm really big on that. I think that every time I do a score, I try and find some sort of signature sound for the game, whether it's a particular instrument or it's a particular sort of suite of instruments or in its approach to the instruments. Each score should sound unique from the last one that I did. Otherwise, it feel personally for me. It feels like I'm phoning it in, like I'm not pushing myself.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of composers. One of the things they love best is being offered the chance to do a game with music that really pushes them, that they have to go in a completely different direction. And so it sounds like this was right up your alley,
It
to
was.
check that box off.
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing day. Like, in the morning, we recorded step dancing, and I don't think that had ever been done before for games. I might be wrong about that, but I've been trying to do my research on it, and I can't find any other games that have done it. So, there are a lot of games done every year, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think I am. So, in the morning, we're doing this thing that I don't think's ever been done, and then in the afternoon, the principal cello player from Nashville's orchestra came in and recorded, and he brought with him his cello that's from the 1700s. So,
Wow.
here the morning is spent doing something that's never been done before, and then in comes this cello that's older than America in the afternoon, and it's just amazing. The whole day was pretty crazy.
Incredible, and I just love kind of the well, the not a disconnect exactly, but the way you can pull all these diverse things together and make this one incredible score. And the other thing that I probably had to work around was all the licensed music too from 1968 that turns up, all over the environment, like when you're driving and you show up at somebody's house and that kind of thing. So, did you have to make your music kind of fit with that as well, or was that a completely separate thing?
It was a completely separate thing in that it was all handled by 2K on their end in terms of figuring out the music licensing and the team there, they would put together the lists of what sort of songs they wanted to have in the game, and then they'd work with the record companies, and the record companies would say, here are the songs that you can have in the game, and here's other stuff that you maybe you don't know about, but it's from the same time period, and so these sorts of things are available to you as well. And so there was a lot of back and forth with them in that regard, and it was a lot of stuff that I thankfully didn't have to worry about. Now, that said, though, the thing that I was doing a lot of is when it came to the production of the pieces, I still wanted things to feel like they fit together. So there are some things that we were doing when it came to producing the instruments, the final tracks, that you wouldn't really ever do now. It's got a dated sound that has, I guess, fallen out of fashion. But because the game set in 1968, I got to play around with some of these things, like recording, you know, big long sustained notes on the piano and then reversing it so that it becomes this long swell that, you know, leads up into a section. The kind of thing that, like, Yes would do on their album Fragile in like the early 70s. Or playing a lot with flange as an effect, and particularly that sort of like very 1960s airplane flange that you would get on guitars a lot. And so I would take that and I would put it on my instrument palette was really kind of crazy because I was trying to do, like I said, I was trying to do a cinematic score, but without an orchestra. Orchestras work really well for scoring film because in part how wonderfully strings work for things like sustained sounds and changing sounds, shifting sounds, pitch shifting, all these glides and just amazing things that you can do with strings that if you then decide, okay, well, my palette's going to be a traditional blues group. You've got piano, which doesn't do pitch shifting, and guitar, which you can do with slides and whatnot, but suddenly the sustain becomes an issue, especially if it's acoustic. So a lot of interesting challenges in that regard. I started to look at it as, if I'm going to do it but not use strings, what are going to be my, you know, what's going to be the analog for strings in this score? And I settled on things like Hammond organ, and I used a bunch of bowed piano, which is a sound I'm completely in love with.
What is that? I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, it's this amazing sound I'm completely in love with that comes, I don't know if he's the first person to do it, but there's a composer in Colorado whose name is Stephen Scott. And he put together a number of years ago now a bowed piano ensemble, and it's you know, they take the top off of the piano and thread throughout the piano nylon strings and different kinds of ways of bowing and agitating the strings, small little things that you can rub against the strings with your fingers and. It takes lots and lots of people to actually play a single bowed piano song. But it's this incredible sound that is exactly what you might think it is. It sustains like a string section, but has a metallic grain to it like a piano. And then depending on what kind of string or bow hair or whatever that you use to actually bow the piano, you get different sorts of sounds as well. And it's just a sound I've been loving for years. When I realized that I had limited myself to not use a string section on the game, but I had given myself permission to use a piano, I realized, oh, well, this would be a great score for me to make use of bowed piano on.
Yeah, because technically, I guess it you're bowing strings, even though it's not, you know, violins and violas.
Yeah. So I have these passages in the score that have a mixture of bowed piano and bowed acoustic guitar and bowed upright bass, but not in a classical sense, more of a grainy bowed jazz kind of sense. And those sounds all combined together with things like Hammond organ became my stand-in string section. So then I would take those sorts of things and I would run flangers on them or run them through Leslie cabinet simulators or things that had a very 60s sound to them in order to help date the sound of what I'm creating and push it back about 50 years.
It that's the thing that just astonishes me about writing music for games, because anything is possible. And then it seems like when you start giving yourself limits and you kind of define where the sound is going to be, then all of a sudden you've got a lot of possibilities for what you can do, and because you have to work within those limits.
Yeah. So, I'm a huge believer in limits. I went to USC's graduate scoring for motion picture and film program back in 2001, a long time ago. One of the things that that we did when we were students there is we had weekly recording sessions that we would have to do for cues, and each teacher would lay out for the cue a palette of instruments, and typically each cue only had 12 instruments that you were allowed to use. And frequently they'd throw us curveballs and say things like, one of your instruments is going to be cuíca, and so now you have technically 11 instruments and one weird noisemaker. So I got used to that process of limiting your palate, and I fell in love with that as a technique, because I think as composers for media, as composers for TV and film and games, so much of what we typically have to do is done virtually with computers. And the problem with computers is that there's no limit on your creativity, and thereby there can be this sort of orchestration bloat that happens, mm-hmm. where you can throw anything at the piece, and so long as your computer will handle the processing power, you can just keep adding more and more and more and more instruments. So even though it's a long time since I've been at USC, I still try and very frequently limit myself to about 12 instruments when I'm writing cues. And I'm not quite so rigid with it as I was back then. And I may make allowances for myself and say, you know, one instrument this time is going to be string section. But, you know, I think if you went through and you counted up the number of instruments used on each cue in Mafia 3, I'm pretty sure you'd find that it's about 12 or less instruments for each cue.
Well, what's so interesting about that, too, I've been at a couple of chamber music performances of game soundtracks, and it really highlights the individual instruments, and you get much more of a kind of an ensemble sound, a thinner sound at times, but it's in a way more interesting than hearing a full orchestra, because everybody
yeah.
has a voice and everybody has a really important role, which is neat.
Yeah, and I think that there's this almost, I don't want to say backlash, again, that's too harsh of a word, but this sort of move away from, I guess they're not moving away yet, but they're talking about it. You hear a lot in the industry people saying, how come games sound so similar these days in terms of scores? You look at how long we've been able to actually use recorded orchestras in our scores, and it's probably only been about, it's not even 15 years yet.
Yeah, it was about the time that the first Xbox and the PS2 came out, because all of a sudden there was that more space in a game.
Yeah, you had a couple games starting to do it in around 2000, maybe 2001 or two with on the PC. But yeah, you're right. Until the PS2 and the Xbox came around, an orchestra had to be virtual. It wasn't really something that the game industry has had much experience with. In that time, we've now gotten to a point where after 15 years, people are starting to think like, okay, got it. What's next? What else? And you'll see people complaining about a sameness of sound. And so I think you're starting to find that a lot of new scores are looking to figure out how to answer that question of, you know, what is next? How do we approach orchestration? How do we approach scoring things that, you know, a game score has a very interesting challenge, in that it has to do the same thing that a TV and a film score do, in that it needs to be a prop and an augmentation of the emotion and the pacing and whatnot that you get in the visual media and the storytelling that it's supporting. However, you then have the added technical challenge of having to do that interactively and do that in a way that frequently needs to be at a minimum recombined on the fly, and sometimes in its more technologically advanced forms recomposed on the fly. So you're starting to find that people are looking at those sorts of challenges and saying, how do we do that and not lean on an orchestra to accomplish it?
Especially because games are so sophisticated now. And with open world games like Mafia 3, you don't know what the player is going to be doing at a particular time. And it seems like a smaller ensemble would be much more nimble and able to handle all of the different little branches that a player might go on and still be part of the action. So it's an interesting time to be a composer, I would imagine.
It is. Yeah, you know, and as games get bigger, you can't, you know, there is still a monetary limit to how much music you can put into a game. You can't, if you have a game that's 100 hours, you can't spend the time it takes to write it. You can't spend the cost it takes to record and produce it to include 100 hours of music. And because of that, it gives us certain creative challenges we have to deal with. And so for something like Mafia 3, for example, everything I wrote was in the key of E minor. And that was done intentionally so that when all of the final pieces made their way back to 2K and they were working on implementing it, any one piece can be stitched onto the end of any other piece. If, you know, I would write character themes and I would write mood-based approaches to character themes. So, you know, Burke is the head of the Irish mob in the game. And so I've got the subdued Burke theme and I've got the Burke is crazy theme and, you know, an emotional range to it. And depending on what's happening in the scene, when Matt is stitching things together in the game, he can just put them end to end as need be to score different scenes and help tell the story that way. And he doesn't have to worry about strange key changes. He doesn't have to worry about tempo changes because I didn't make it all one tempo because that's a little crazy. When everything got delivered to him, everything was delivered as individual mix stems too, and not just a single mixed, you know, here is Q12 in all of its, you know, completion. He would have a drum stem and a bass stem and a you know, the bowed piano stem, etc. So if need be, he not only can go in and attach cues end to end because they'll fit because they're all in the same key, but if need be, he can strip back a cue and maybe take all the guitars out of it, take the drums out, and now he has almost a new cue just by subtraction. Or maybe he takes the drums from one cue and puts it over a more ambient cue from another part, and now he has a new cue in feel, even though it's been combined from various pieces from a couple other cues.
That is incredible. I mean, it's amazing to have the skills to be able to do that, and I'm sure he appreciated that too, because it made his job a lot easier too. Yeah, Jesse, it has been so much fun to talk with you. This music is a great fit with the game, and wow, thank you so much.
Kate, thank you. It's really been a pleasure.